Welcome back, everyone, to Sunday's Leftovers. My name is Paul Klein with, as always, pastor and friend Matt Higginbotham. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, Mr. Klein. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. School's almost out.
School, y'all are done tomorrow.
Yeah.
My son got out a week ago, tomorrow. So we're already kind of in the throes of summer, but I know Rockdale and Thorndale and Milano are all getting out tomorrow.
Yeah.
When this comes out, I assume if I put it up like I'm supposed to today for the viewer. But yeah. So good. Kids will be home for the summer.
They will. Yeah. We're cleaning up after the storm. So we've had, fortunately, no serious damage, but we're not quite in the throes of summertime at our house yet. But we're getting ready. Give it a week.
Yeah. We got our little above ground pool set up in our yard now. Mm-hmm. So the kids are playing in that and stuff. Yeah.
What else is going on?
We're working through. Our family has a large collection of board and dice and card games, and I mean like a closet full of these things.
I can attest to that.
Yeah.
Yep,
so we're working through those. I told my college age kids who've been home for a couple weeks. I said, "Hey, I want to get through these." And so every day we're playing, I don't know, 1 to 3 of these games and. Mm-hmm. The objective is to eliminate some of them from that closet. That has not happened yet. Mm. So maybe when we're done, we'll just kind of take a pair of scissors to the bottom of the list because we're ranking them all in trying to get a list of games that we actually might enjoy to play.
Yeah.
So we're just trying to make a little room in that closet. Got a lot of puzzles too. If anyone wants a puzzle, reach out to me on Sunday and then I will bring you a couple the following Sunday. So there's a free puzzle offer from your pastor because somehow we ended up with a ton of puzzles and we don't use but a few a year. So that's
speaking of Sunday. What'd you preach about?
Yeah, so Sunday I was finishing John chapter 13, mm-hmm. and Judas has departed off into the night, and Jesus gathers the other 11. And says, look, I'm going to give you this new commandment to love one another as I have loved you. The whole world will know you're my disciples by the way you love one another. But he also kind of before that, he says, like, I'm about to leave and you can't follow me where I'm going. And then he gives this command. And then Peter's still stuck on the previous thing. He's like, what do you mean I can't follow you? Like, we'll follow you. We've left everything. I'm going to follow you. You know, and Jesus is like, no, you can't. Like, you'll follow me later, but you're not going to follow me now.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter's like, look, like I will die for you. I will lay down my life for you. And he's kind of reprimanded by Jesus. Jesus says, would you lay down your life for me? It's kind of an incredulous statement. Like, are you going to do the thing that I'm actually here to do for you? Is that what's going to happen right now? And then he kind of predicts to Peter's like, by the end of, you know, this day, when the next morning breaks, you're going to be denying me whenever the sun is coming up
right
tomorrow. So, or I guess in the Jewish calendar, as who knew, later today.
Yeah, halfway through the day. Right, yeah. You're right. 100% right. That's not confusing at all. So part of that was talking about the difference between love and loving one another and loving the church, but also what does it mean to be arrogant? And so we've already talked a little bit about love, the different types of love that the Bible talks about. And so I thought it might be good to do, what does it mean to be arrogant? And so what I'd like to do is start with a definition of arrogance. Several words that are kind of similar to arrogance used in the Bible, what the characteristics are, what the results are, and then what do we do about it? Sound like a plan?
Man, I'm here for it.
Cool. All right. So some of the words I found similar synonyms to arrogance would be pride, haughtiness, self-exaltation. But the real thing is that we're functionally replacing God's authority with our own. And so we are placing our authority above God's or someone else's. And so one of the characteristics is fierce independence. So could you read for me James 4, 13 through 17?
James 4, 13 through 17.
Mm-hmm.
All right, James writes, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him, it is sin.
So again, functionally removing ourselves from God's will. So I'm just going to say what I'm going to do because I'm going to do it. Comments?
Yeah, I mean, the point, right, of the James passage is that we are not actually the masters of any part of our life, right? Yeah. Like, God is over all things, sovereign over all things. And so if you were to be like, well, I'm going to do this, you don't have the power to fulfill that obligation, right, that you're giving. And so he says, instead of boasting in what you say you're going to do, mm-hmm, it's like, hey, you know, if you know, God wills, this is what we'll do. You know, we'll do this tomorrow.
And in this particular instance, it's business planning, right? But like, it could apply to anything. Like anything you're going to do in your own life, like, you got to understand that if it's God's will, it's going to be done, right?
Yeah, and I think it's less about having like, man, we have to say these magic words before we tell, right, people what we're going to do. You know, I intend, after we're done up here today, to go to my house, mm-hmm, and then likely to my son's house to see my 2-week-old grandbaby. That's what my intentions are today. I don't think I have to say, like, if the Lord wills, I will go home and, right, go to, like, otherwise it's sin for me to do that. But it is inside of me to recognize, like, I'm only going to be able to fulfill what I'm intending to do if God allows me to do that. And so to live in submission to God functionally, and maybe sometimes you do need to put it out there verbally to slow yourself down about, sure, your big, massive plans that you have for your life. But it's an internal knowledge of, like, you know, whatever God is going to do, he has full reign over me. I'm not trying to supersede his authority here. So,
right.
Yeah.
Next one I have from Independence is resistance to correction or reproof. And this could be resistance to correction from the Lord, Holy Spirit, from others. Sometimes you'll hear an excuse given, well, I'm just opinionated, like I have a loud opinion. And so I have Proverbs 18:2 as our example for resistance to reproof.
Proverbs 18, verse 2, mm-hmm, reads like this. A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion.
Comments on that? It's pretty self-explanatory, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the fool doesn't want to know anything out there. They just want to speak their own, whatever it is that's on their mind, without any idea that there's any expertise out there beyond them.
Yep. The last one I have is generally a desire for debate or controversy. So 1 Timothy 6, 3 through 5.
Paul writes, if anyone teaches a different doctrine and does not agree with the sound words of our Lord Jesus Christ and the teaching that accords with godliness, he is puffed up with conceit and understands nothing. He has an unhealthy craving for controversy and for quarrels about words, which produce envy, dissension, slander, evil suspicions, and constant friction among the people who are depraved in mind and deprived of the truth, imagining that godliness is a means of gain. Where am I supposed to go through?
I had it through 5.
That was it.
Yeah. Comments on that?
I think generally we're supposed to avoid dissension and quarreling, and there are people who really long for that, right?
Sure.
Who inside of their own knowledge of what they think they know, and maybe they do genuinely know, there's no humility inside of them, and so they're always looking for a fight. I feel like this in certain sectors of the church is really popular, where I'll use Southern Baptist Life as an example. Whenever I was young, the Southern Baptist Convention went through what was called the Conservative Resurgence, and it was a fight for inerrancy and things like that. So to hold the Bible as true, as sufficient, that it is God's word, and that fight was ugly. A lot of people kind of got caught in the crossfire there, but ultimately, I think we were fighting over something that matters. I think it matters what we hold about that. And after that fight sort of was settled, the people who lost left, the people or got on board, and the people who were, remained were all in agreement on that. You would think there'd be a this like peace.
Sure.
Right. We've agreed on the thing that we're fighting on. We're all in agreement on this major foundational issue, so we should have peace. But since then, there's never been peace, and there wasn't peace before that. There's always a new controversy of the day. So for a while, it was Calvinism versus mm-hmm. Arminianism was the battle lines that were being drawn there. And look what the Calvinists are doing, and look what these, you know, people who don't embrace the doctrines of grace are mm-hmm. doing, yeah, right? Yeah. And so they're you know, there's this war going on there, and they were teaming up and fighting against each other and trying to get their people into positions of power. And then that fight even sort of like got – no one won that fight, by the way. But that fight kind of got cold because I was like, hey, let's fight about something different.
Sure.
And so now it's, you know, the role of women within mm-hmm. the church's ministry. And, you know, we're complementarians. We believe that there's unique roles for genders. Like there's a difference between male and female, and that's reflected in some things in the church, specifically the role of the pastor. But we're fighting about – yeah, we're fighting over language, over titles that churches use.
Right, for different.
And so, like, there's just, we're always aiming for a fight. And I just, it's for me, it's exhausting. So I'm like, why?
Yeah.
But there's just some people who really have like a quarreling spirit. And it is very much a, you must be in my, if we're going to be together, you've got to be inside of my very, you have to believe exactly like me.
Right.
Or you're wrong.
Or you're wrong, yeah.
And for, like, I have opinions on all these issues. I guess you can sit down and talk to me about those later. But it's not even whether or not these things matter for the church, because they do. It's about the spirit in which they've been done and the fact that when one is resolved, there's no peace.
Right.
Like, I know, like, after this Southern Baptist Convention, which will take place in the summer, and they'll fight about positions of women in ministry and things like that. At some point, that fight is going to be done in the next 5 years, probably. And immediately, something else will come up to split
right.
the...
Inevitably, right?
Yeah. So it's just... And it happens in the church as well. So just be on guard against that, against being the person who's quarrelsome and puffed up in your own knowledge, and instead seek godliness with contentment.
So some other words used to describe... the characteristics of arrogance: boastful, unloving, self-absorbed, condescending, and lack of concern for others. So don't want to go through scriptures for all of them because in the sake of time. So, sure. But we're going to transition. We kind of already hinted to it. What are the results of arrogance? And we'll actually go to the bottom of the list here that I have because we just talked about it. Unnecessary conflict. So Proverbs 13:10. Yes. So, yeah, there is some importance to debate and controversy, especially about truth. And what we want to avoid is unnecessary conflict.
Proverbs 13:10 says, "By insolence comes nothing but strife, but with those who take advice, is wisdom." Yeah, and so there is this idea of just constant strife, right? Like from the fool, right? The insolent, the fool, and they're always seeking for strife and. What happens there? Nothing good. It's just constant. It's constant friction.
And a lot of times, inability to prioritize what's truly important versus what really doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Well, and like there's a, like for like mechanical purposes, like there's an engine that drives the church, which is our Great Commission and the Great Commandment. And these are the two things that kind of keep the church pumping down the track towards where we're supposed to go. Mm-hmm. Tell other people about Jesus, love God, love others. Tell other people about Jesus, love God, love others. And this is the thing that drives the church. And people, like, it's simple enough that we were like, oh, yeah, that's pretty easy. But then we're like, well, what, are we supposed to love people like this? Are we supposed to,
right?
Well, what exactly do you mean to love God? And how does this look? And there's this idea of people are always just kind of like tossing like a handful of sand into the engine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, now the engine is less effective at what it's supposed to do. Like, it's still trying to pump. But there's oil shooting out the sides,
yeah.
And like it's a mess because we've added friction, oftentimes unnecessarily. We're not smoothing it out. We're not like, man, I'm going to refine this to make it better. We're just casting aspersions
and wearing it out,
wearing the
prematurely,
whole,
right?
Yeah.
Another thing I have listed here is self-deception. Proverbs 26:12. This may be the person who doesn't even realize that they're being perhaps boastful or arrogant.
Yeah. Do you see a man who is wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than for him.
And the hint here being wise in your own eyes, again, not even realizing that you may even potentially have an error or a flaw or think differently than someone else.
Comments yeah. On that? Yeah. I just think it's, you know, that's one of the great things about being in a community of people who you have like an honest relationship with mm-hmm. is that, like, if you're married, your spouse should be able to help pull back some of that stuff. So there's times when my wife will pull me, she'll be like, Matt, you were out of line there. And initially, I'm always like, no, I wasn't, because I'm defensive and I have enough pride and arrogance inside of mm-hmm. me that I know my initial reaction. But I'll sit on it sometimes and reflect on it, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, I know I was wrong.
I laugh because I know the exact same feeling.
I handle that exactly yep. wrong.
Exactly.
And so it's helpful to have other people because there are you're going to have blind spots, things that you think you're doing great at when in reality you're not. And you need to be able – you need to have people who can tell you the truth, who feel the freedom to tell you the truth. And then hopefully you can condition yourself and train yourself to discipline yourself to, like, hear – and not immediately shut them off and say, well, you're just a hater or you don't right. support me. Or
you don't understand what I'm, yeah.
Yeah, in the ministry, you know, you can just kind of put silos up.
Sure.
And like, oh, well, Paul, you know, I used to do this podcast with Paul, but then he said something that was like real, like kind of attacked my ministry. It's like, I don't do anything with Paul anymore.
Yeah.
Like, and I just like, I'm busy doing other stuff. I'm going to keep Paul on the outside of my circle because he's not for me. And really what he was trying
to be the exact opposite, yeah, right?
And really what he was trying to do is like, Matt, did you know you did, you know, when you said this, it, you know, it came across like this or whatever. And I've seen a lot of guys, and I'm sure I've done it before myself, where we just get so defensive about like, I'm right. And I'm always yeah. right. And yeah, we're oftentimes not.
Did you say it frequently, but difference between being right and doing the right thing. And sometimes the right thing is just listening rather than proving to people that you're right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, you can be wrong in how you're right.
Yeah.
Which is difficult sometimes. Well said. Because you're like, man, I'm right. And you're like, yeah, but you're
very wrongly right.
Yeah.
Next one I have here is that you may find yourself, or you will find yourself, in opposition to God. We're going to go back to James 4:6-7.
Really appreciate the Bible drill I get to do here. 4, 6, or 7.
Once a week.
Yeah. But he gives more grace. Therefore, it says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you.
Comments on that?
Yeah, what a beautiful thing, right? That,
yeah.
that he gives grace to the humble. He's going to oppose us, though, in our pride, yeah. which is a scary thought. Like,
sure.
That God is actively in opposition to us. Like, the picture for me in that is like Balaam,
mm-hmm.
who's going mm-hmm. to do the prophecies against the nation of Israel at the request of Balak. And like, he's going, and God's like, he goes to God. He's like, God, can I do this? And God's like, no.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, guys, I can't do it. And then they come back the next day and they're like, hey, can I do it? And God's like, no. And he's so he tells them no. And they come back the next day and he's like, please, Balaam, do it. So he goes to God and he's like, God, they still want me to do it. Can mm-hmm. I do it? And God's like, yeah, go, just do exactly what I say. And Balaam is now kind of acting in his own accord, like yeah. in his own thing. And like, this donkey's running him into a wall and crushing his foot. And he's mad at the donkey. He's beating the donkey. And the donkey turns around and just like berates him. He's like, I've always been a good donkey. What do you think's going on here? Because yeah. he doesn't see the danger.
See it.
Balaam doesn't see the angel who's yeah. going to kill him. And God's actively opposing Balaam in his pride. Like, he wants Balaam to humble himself.
Right.
So, like, just know, like, God will actively oppose you in your pride. You may shun the discipline of others, and you may even shun the discipline of the Lord, but at some point, like, it'll be evident on you. Yeah. The alternative, though, is to live a life of humility in which God will, like, give you grace. Like, God lavishes grace upon the humble. So sure.
I do love the story too, because my question always is who's the donkey, right? Like, I mean, it's a perfect picture of that particular animal. So
yeah.
Next one I have here is destruction. Proverbs 16:18.
I'm should have just kept a thumb in Proverbs. 16:18. Here we go. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall.
Cool. And I have just listed it. We're not going to read all of it, but we've referenced this before. But Daniel chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar is a fantastic example of what it means to be boastful, prideful, and arrogant and receive the judgment of the Lord. And so we're not going to read all of it. But
yeah,
if
but
you
that's
want
the
to,
look at, you know, look at
it's a big,
what
broad
I built,
example. Yeah.
Look at
yeah,
what
yeah.
I built. Look
narrative.
At what I did. And
yep.
Nope, you're going to eat grass like an animal.
So the question is what can we do about it? And so I was thinking, like, all right, what are the things that we can do to help correct our behavior if we're arrogant? But then I realized, as an arrogant and prideful person myself, everything I came across really was actually trying to just do a sober self-assessment and judgment to even get to the point that maybe we might be prideful or arrogant. So actually what I found is the most important thing we can do is be humble enough to admit that we might actually be prideful or arrogant. And so we might have blind spots. So first verse I have is Romans 12:3-5.
For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. For as in one body we have many members, and the members do not all have the same function, so we, though many, are one body in Christ, and individually members of one of another.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I think that's a portion about the specifically spiritual giftings of of the members of the church. However, there is a section in there talking that my gift is not better than your gift. Your gift is not better than mine, right?
Yeah, and to not think more highly of yourself, right? To have sober judgment. The whole point there is to, like, don't think just because I have this skill, I'm so much better, right?
Sure.
Like, and that pride pushes that on people, especially people who end up with like a public platform, a teaching, preaching, whatever, where you've got people who listen to you. Well, there's a sense of, like, man, look at how gifted that person is. And everyone's like, I'm so proud of you and you're so great. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, I am great, aren't I? Mm-hmm. And yeah, then it's downhill.
Yeah. The next one I have is these are questions that we're going to ask ourselves. So do we clearly split logs or do we blindly pluck splinters? So Matt 7:1-5.
Jumping whole books. Matthew 7:1-5. Judge not that you not be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when there is a log in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye.
So to be clear on this, the judgment is not judging right or wrong. We should judge what's right or wrong. This is a condemnation of someone who may fall into sin and making sure you deal with your own stuff first. Comments on that?
Well, correct there, right? And the idea here is, you know, you need to be able to look at yourself and recognize, like, when you're looking down on other people, that you've got a lot of things that you're ignoring.
Sure.
In the process of being able to feel superior to other people. And so that really comes down to allowing God to sift you and to sort you out and to put you where you need to be before you start trying to, like, criticize and critique and sand off the rough edges of the people who God's put in your life.
Yeah. Which leads us into our next question to ask ourselves. Do we find ourselves more critical or more compassionate to others? We're going to go back to James 4 again.
Feels like we could have just done a study in James
4
today.
You know what? We probably could have. 11-12.
Maybe. All right. Do not speak evil against one another, brothers. The one who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks evil against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is only one lawgiver and judge, he who is able to save and to destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbor?
And I think, just as a side note, sometimes these passages about judgment can get misused to where somebody may be in a life of sin, and it's like, well, you shouldn't judge me. It's like, the judgment, again, is not that we shouldn't judge truth or fiction. Like, we should. have good discernment in judging truth. It's the condemnation of someone else. Comments on that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think for judgment, like we're not, like I don't get to make the measure in which things should be judged by. Right. And that's where judgment becomes dangerous. If I stand up and say, well, you're not measuring up to the standards that I have for you. It's uncaring to not tell someone who's walking in sin that you love that the path that they're on leads to destruction. Like that's an uncaring thing. And not, it's not judgmental of them to be like, hey, you're walking down a path to perdition. It's just like, it's not unloving for the highway department to put a sign up to let you know that there's a curve coming down the highway, right? Like who are they to tell me what to do with my life? Like it's right for them to put that there so you don't drive off the edge as the road curves.
It's loving, right? They're looking after you.
So for judgment, I think that's important for us to look that, to not stand in there. Yeah, for sure. So
another passage I have that I think leans more towards compassionate is Colossians 3, 12 through 13. Colossians 3, 12 through 13.
Put on then as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other as the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive.
And so we again go into forgiveness here. Like the Lord can forgive me, I can certainly forgive others, right?
Yeah, and the concept of putting on these other things, putting on compassion and kindness and things like this is, like there's an activeness to that. It's not a...
Well said.
It's not a just be this, like it's a volitional choice of like I'm going to put on compassion. The compassion that Christ had for me, I'm going to put on when dealing with the person who's sinned against me.
Yeah, I think there's certainly people that fall naturally into some more merciful, some more compassionate, some more serving. But I think you're absolutely right. There's things that I know I have to actively put on myself.
Yeah.
So the next question we might ask ourselves is, what do we find ourselves doing more of? Are we finding fault or are we bearing one another's burdens? Galatians 6, 1 through 5.
Galatians 6, 1 through 5.
Yes, sir.
Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something, when he's nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be... But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor, for we each have to bear his own load. Through 5 or 6?
I have 5.
Okay.
Yeah. And so earlier it says bearing one another's burden, and then says about bearing our own burden. So unpack that.
Yeah. So this is a neat little thing, right? Because, you know, so bear each other's burdens, and you're like, okay, so that means I'm supposed to help carry other people's loads, what it is that they're over encumbered by. And it says, well, bear your own burden. And you're like, well, if I have to bear my own burden, I have to bear other people's. Just bear my burden.
Yeah.
That's a natural question. But it's not an accident that these are in the same paragraph in the Bible. It's not like the writer of Galatians, Paul, was like, yeah, we should bear our own stuff. You're responsible for your own stuff. Oh, no, we're responsible for other people's
intentionally
stuff.
Intentionally like, confusing, right? No, that's not.
No. So there's a load which is meant to be shared among the brethren. What we are supposed to care and carry other people's like over encumbered burdens.
Mm-hmm.
So like when you go through something and you reach out to someone and say, hey, I need prayer, right? That's you sharing that burden
mm-hmm.
to them. And it's wise of us to step up and be like, yeah, I have a responsibility now to bear that. To pray for them, to support them. Maybe there's a financial need that I can come and meet as well. But there's other burdens that you're individually called to bear. There's things that are your responsibility. And so you've got to bear your responsibility as well. And so like, you know, the day-to-day, you know, I'll use finances as a good example, but like paying for my groceries is my responsibility. Mm-hmm. There may become a time when I'm unable to do that, in which case then it would be over encumbered.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm constantly asking people to buy my groceries, like I'm probably not bearing the part of the load that I'm supposed right. to be bearing on my own. There'd have to be a reason, like an extraordinary reason that would not be sure. the case for me. But there's other things where like, you know, loss of a loved one or, trouble inside of your marriage or with mm-hmm. your children, a health crisis where you're like, man, I can't do anymore. Mm-hmm. Like I'm at my end. And then we step in and fill that gap.
Yeah. Next one I have, there are three more here. Do we find ourselves quarrelsome and cut down, or are we encouraging and edify? 2 Timothy 2:22-26. Are we more quarrelsome or more encouraging?
So flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. Have nothing to do with foolish, ignorant controversies. You know that they breed quarrels. And the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but kind to everyone, able to teach, patiently enduring evil, correcting his opponents with gentleness. God may perhaps grant them repentance, leading to a knowledge of the truth, that they may come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil after being captured by him to do his will.
Kind of already hit on this a few times with conflict, but quarrelsome. Anything?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like Paul's writing to Timothy as a leader in the church. And so the idea is like, you don't need to be involved in these fights that are just fights for fight's sake. Yeah. Some people just really like to fight. So don't get down in the mud like that. Respond with kindness, compassion, truth. Maybe they'll be won over by your way, but there's a humility there because when someone attacks you, like you want to attack back in a similar mm-hmm. or greater way,
mm-hmm.
right? And to respond with like humility and compassion and just like not going to raise my voice. I'm not going to get, I feel my hands clenching. I feel my chest starting to get mm-hmm. that thing. And then the rage is coming. I'm not going to respond like that. I'm not going to give into that. I'm going to respond with truth, mm-hmm. kindness, compassion, and maybe like they'll be won over, right, from their ways, come to their senses, as it says.
Yeah. Next one I have is, are you humble or are you haughty? 1 Peter 5:6-7.
Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him because he cares for you.
And I guess the question I'd have for myself is, who do I turn to in times of trouble, myself or God, right?
Yeah.
Next one I have is, do we freely forgive or do we callously condemn? Matthew 18:21-22.
Matthew.
Yes, sir.
Then Peter came up and said to him, Lord, how often will my brother sin against me and I forgive him? As many as 7 times? And Jesus said to him, I do not say to you 7 times, but 77 times. Through what? 22?
Yes, 22. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Fair to say that forgiveness is a sign of humility.
Yeah. Well, and on that, it's not, have I hit 77?
Right. Yeah. No, that's like that's not the point.
Have I made it to 77? It's basically just you're supposed to forgive without measure. Like we're forgiving this perfect idea of like completion, perfection, 7, right?
Yeah.
And 7 seems like a lot. If someone wrongs me in the same way 7 times, I'll be like, man, I'm doing a lot of forgiving here.
Sure.
77 times, you realize like I'm just going to forgive.
It's perpetual.
Because it's who God's called me to be.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to. At 7 times, you're probably raging, but at 77 times, you're like, oh, this person's, they're broken.
Yeah.
And I'm continuing
hopefully
to forgive
that's the realization, them. Right? Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think so. I think at that point, you've probably come to that realization somewhere along the way. I don't know where it is between 7 and 77. You kind of come to the realization of like, I don't need to be mad at this person necessarily. You realize like they're really busted up.
Yeah.
So I'm going to forgive them freely. That doesn't mean you want to give everyone the same access. Like,
sure. Well, there's like a difference between forgiveness and trust, right?
If someone was stealing from my wallet,
sure, yeah,
I would probably watch my wallet when I was around them if I knew that they continued to steal. Like,
sure,
that's common sense, but it doesn't mean that I'm not going to extend the forgiveness as someone who's been wronged.
Yeah. And the last thing I wanted to touch on too is that if you spent the last 35 minutes listening to all of this and think that none of it applies to you, we might want to take some time to reconsider, because I think we can all probably take something from this. Comments?
Yeah.
I know I do. I did this week for sure.
So I try to list off sins that I find that are attractive to me. And this idea of pride and arrogance is always near the top of things that kind of crouch kind of at my door, where I'm like, yeah, I've got to be on guard. Because it's such a quiet and generally approved sin.
Mm-hmm.
Like people, I mean, you don't like arrogant people if they really present that way, but man, it really is generally allowed. Like if I was, abusing my wife or something, like that's not socially acceptable. No. It'd be like, man, this guy's, he's a terrible human being. I can't believe he would do that. But if I always act like I know everything and I always feel like I have all the answers and I...
Well, you're super successful and you're famous, right?
And I insult the people who are my opponents, and I make enemies out of everybody who's different than me. And people are like, man, this is a good guy. He's really got it together. And really oftentimes I think that's like a mark of an immature Christian who's just not walking in humility. They're not mortifying pride in their flesh, and pride is... it's always been listed on the list of like seven deadly sins, or, when C.S. Lewis wrote Mere Christianity, pride is seen as one of those chief sins as well. The idea is like it's at the core of everything that we have when we do things wrong. Like I steal because I believe that I deserve to have that. I covet because I believe that I should have what you have. I hate because you're getting credit for something that that I wanted to get. And so there's a real kind of root syndrome of pride that is at the baseline of much, if not all, sin. And to think that you don't struggle with it is probably arrogance in and of itself. So yeah.
it's interesting, right? Because if you think you don't have any mistakes, you're not going to look for the mistakes that you think you don't have, right?
Yeah. So, why would I?
Yeah, I know.
I'm perfect.
We already talked about that.
Yeah.
All right.
I've made a mistake once.
I know. Which one was that?
I thought a pierogi was a sandwich, Paul. Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's more like a dumpling.
Yep. Yeah. I do know that. Yeah. They're pretty common where I'm from. So.
Yeah, they weren't common in my life. Yeah. It was a hoagie, pierogi, get them all mixed up. Real shameful moment for me.
It is.
Yeah. All right.
Let me close it.
Yeah. Lord, I love you. And I thank you for being a God who hears, a God who sees, a God who forgives. Lord, and I know that we struggle with pride as people, and a lot of that's because we have a real defective view of you. We don't realize how insignificant we are in relation to you. So I ask, Lord, that you would give us a clear vision of who you are, to put us in a rightful place, not to diminish us, but to magnify you. And we love you. Amen. Peace.